Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm David Hartman. Please welcome our guests this morning, Ray Fowler, Charlie Valera, and Steve Snyder. Ray Fowler, on your far right, is a lieutenant colonel in the Alabama Guard. He's flown four tours in F-16s, three in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. And he is also a guy who flies every one of these airplanes that has a motor and wings. And Ray is also the president of the Liberty Foundation. Charlie Valera has written a book that's a bestseller these days. It's called My Father's War. And Steve has written a book called Shot Down, Howard Snyder and B-17 Susan Ruth. So we'll talk about all of this now. Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Ray, start us off. This airplane, Madras, I know that Connie mentioned it just a moment about Madras, Oregon. But who is Jack Erickson, a pioneer guy in aviation?
He's an amazing guy. Jack was supposed to be here today. Obviously, he would have been far more exciting to talk to than myself. Jack is part of the Erickson Collection. I say part of it. He is the Erickson Collection. So he's Aviation Hall of Fame, unbelievable pioneer in the Erickson Sky Crane helicopter, if you're familiar with that. I mean, that goes way back. And they pretty much have their hands in everything in aviation. But obviously a huge custodian of aviation with his collection. He has everything from, you know, P-38s, fighters, like 22 flying aircraft, and he acquired this aircraft several years ago, and fortunately I had the opportunity to deliver it to him, and we formed a partnership with the Liberty Foundation, and this airplane has never toured, so the Liberty Foundation's charter is obviously to take the airplane to the public. It's not really easy to get to Madras, Oregon, so it's kind of great to be able to take the airplanes out of Madras and to take them on the road, which we're doing this year, and we're going to add other aircraft and hopefully come to hometowns with this one. And again, since no one's really seen it and had an opportunity to ride in it, I mean, a lot of people rode in the other touring aircraft. Now they can go get in this airplane and go take a flight.
Great. We might also mention that Jack Erickson is big in firefighting. I mean, what they have done in pioneering ways to fight fires. And goodness knows we have a lot of them these days out west, especially.
I had an amazing tour. They're just starting to firefight with the Mad Dogs, so the MD-82s, and they did all the engineering for the release out of those aircraft. So, and they've just got their certification. So now they're starting to sunset some of the older PB-2 airplanes you see that have fought for so many years for fighting fires in the west, and they're obviously more jets, and they can get there quicker, and they have a little more, and that's all Jack Erickson and his group of engineers that put that together. It's amazing.
Well, Ray, that every one of these airplanes, the names always have, a meaning, a historical meaning. How historical is the meaning of Madras Maven, Maiden?
It's important Maven to Madras, really. So this airplane, a lot of people might have seen it in previous life as Chucky. So it flew as Chucky for 30 plus years with Doc Hospers. Once Doc Hospers passed on, it was acquired by Jerry Yagan with the Military Aviation Museum, and he had it for several years and flew it as Chucky, and then ultimately ended up going to Erickson as Chucky. So they were looking for an airplane to honor all the veterans of Madras. And so Madras was a very big training base for B-17. So unlike a lot of the airplanes that are painted up as a historical scheme that actually flew in World War II, this airplane is really more of a tribute to all the veterans from Madras that flew there. And it's a great name, and they came up with the nose art themselves and the paint for Madras. And again, we do want people to go to Madras. It's worth the trip if you get to take a trip out there just to go into their museum. You'll see airplanes you'll never see anywhere else. Their latest being an ME-109 that just flew, and again, they're just continually adding airplanes, and their charter is to fly airplanes, which is great. So it's cool to see them sitting in a museum, not to fly, but to go up there and watch them fly is really a lot more special as well.
How challenging is it to take these airplanes that were built in this case 1940s, and not only restore them, but maintain them so they are flyable in a safe way day after day? How challenging is that?
The challenge is really the financial end of it. You know, obviously it takes a lot of money. So everybody always asks, what's it take to keep a B-17 flying? We say a lot of money. Just in gas alone, we budget for 200 gallons an hour. So when you pull up to the pumps, that leaves a mark in your wallet. But and that's part of the Liberty Foundation as well. I mean, it's all about honoring the veterans, and it's keeping the airplanes flying. So, there's a different component of the owners that own the airplanes, and they bring them to the public versus some of the museums like the Liberty Foundation that tries to share it with the public and put people on board and let them to take a flight experience in the airplane and make it affordable. You know, not everybody can afford to go fly in a B-17. But again, when we see the kids come up and they know more about B-17s than we do, and we see it a lot, it's I'm always humbled when a young kid comes up and tells me something I don't know about a B-17 after flying one for 20-plus years. And we know that history's staying alive, and it's just, you know, being a small part of that is amazing.
Try to compare for us. You fly F-16s all the time and have for a long time. What's it like to climb out of an F-16 and then climb into this airplane and fly it? What are the extra challenges?
Well, the biggest thing I would say challenge-wise is these airplanes are really stick and rudder airplanes, and I think this is something that is kind of a lost art in the newer airplanes that are more automated. They take care of you more. So the F-16, you're really not flying that airplane. The computer's flying it. You're really focused on the mission and the avionics and doing what it was designed to do. Whereas this airplane, you're flying it all the time. You know, so again, for all pilots, and I know most people here even today are pilots, if you haven't flown a tail dragger, you need to go out. You know, I've run across people that have thousands, tens of thousands of hours, they've never been in a tailwheel airplane. So you get in this airplane with a tailwheel, it will make you a better pilot to go fly a Cub or to go fly any airplane that does that. In certain flight schools I've run across, they're starting kids in a tailwheel for the first 6, 8, 10 hours of their flying instruction. I think that's unbelievably important because the tricycle gear airplanes, and particularly the bigger and the jets, they take care of you. You can get away with a lot in those airplanes. You can really have a poor technique in landing, and the airplane's still going to go straight. These airplanes are doing everything they can to not go straight, so it really does help to do that. Whereas the F-16, I've said it for years, I could solo you in an F-16 much quicker than I could solo you in a B-17 or a tailwheel airplane because, again, that airplane, when it lands, it wants to go straight as an arrow. It's very easy to fly, and they want it easy to fly. They don't want me to have to focus on the basic aircraft control whenever I'm out pulling around trying to find a target and shoot something. So, but this airplane, again, there's no automation to help you. You know, things, little things, just the simple stuff of putting the gear down to land. You know, most World War II airplanes, they don't have all the nice bells and whistles to tell you you didn't put the gear down, whereas, you know, every modern airplane will be screaming at you all the way till you touch down. So it's the bigger and newer is typically easier to fly than these airplanes.
What are the avionics in this airplane? How to what extent do they maybe, you know, put new glass stuff in there and so on?
Some of them are very modern. This one obviously has a GPS. We fly it all over the country, so the panel's very, you know, fairly authentic. But we do add a GPS, and of course everybody looks at that and they always ask, you know, well, that wasn't there in World War II. And, of course, the joke is that, yeah, it was black and white display back then. And they have to think about that for a second or two. But, I think World War II had been over a lot quicker had we had GPS in there because you don't miss. You find where you're going. And other than that, this one's fairly authentic. Some of the other airplanes I fly are very modern, you know, with glass. And again, that's for safety. But a lot of people want to keep them authentic. And I fly some that are very authentic. And of course, then we cheat. We have our iPads and our iPhones and that's how we cheat and find out where we're going. So it makes you lazy. Obviously, a GPS makes you lazy for navigation. But other than that, they're fairly authentic. Everything else is.
Charlie, Ray just mentioned veterans. Why'd you write your book, My Father's War? Why?
We're losing a lot of these guys, and we need to get their stories. So when my father passed away, we never got any stories. I have three brothers. There's four of us. And
your father flew?
My father was part of a support group in the 8th Army during World War II. And when he passed away, we just never got any stories. And then long after he was gone, 15 years later, I found out he was in Europe for 3 years, and he was all over Europe. He was in Normandy, Rome, Po Valley, Sicily. And it's too bad he didn't share the stories. So as a result, I thought, you know, we really need to find, somebody needs to sit down with these guys and get as many of their stories. What was their life like? What was the day-to-day, did they really march behind a tank? What were these guys like that were flying these, or the ball turret gunners? How about the guys that got shot down, and did they survive? And what was it like? So, you know, the day-to-day stuff. And that was why I really wrote the book, because I wanted the research to find out for their children in all of our families. I'm sure everybody out here has got a connection to them, as we were talking inside. And that was really the reason why I spent 3 years interviewing World War II veterans.
3 years?
Yeah, it was about 3 years.
How many of you in the audience know somebody or somebody in your family who fought in World War II, but you rarely, if ever, heard any stories about what they did when they were in the war? How many? Yeah. Wow. Wow.
That's why I did this. You know,
there it is.
80-90% of the people sitting here.
What were some of these most compelling stories you heard? And how many different types of folks did you talk to?
Well, you know, I try to really paint it with a broad brush. So I have from both theaters. But, of course, being a pilot, I'm drawn a little bit to the B-17 captain, as well as there's another guy that was a Cub pilot that did reconnaissance. So I had both ends of that spectrum. And then there was a dive bomber and turret gunners. But the stories were all the day-to-day stuff that they didn't talk about. Again, as you and I were saying inside, B-17, one of the engines catches on fire. He's at 30,000 feet. He's got to put the fire out. And we know how to do it as pilots, but to try to explain it to somebody that isn't, you know, he's got to slip it down, keep that wing up, keep that engine getting as much air. He went from 30,000 feet down to 10,000.